welcome to another Thursday afternoon. The first Thursday afternoon here on KALX Berkeley 90.7 FM for the year 2010, meaning it is the very first Arts and Review of the year. Welcome to January, everybody. My name is Gregory Sharpen, here with you for the next half hour to talk about things artistic, hence the name. Joined today by a formerly local photographer who is now living her life in the wilds of Albuquerque, but has returned for an exhibition. She's part of an exhibition at San Francisco Camera Works called An Autobiography of the San Francisco Bay Area. We have with us today Jessamine Lovell. I'd like to thank you very much for coming in and talking with us today.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
This exhibition opens tonight, I believe.
It does. It's the reception.
And maybe just to start us off, if you want to talk a little bit about the exhibition and how you got drawn into it.
Sure. Yeah. I'd love to. Well, I've been involved with SF Camera Work since I first moved here as a young grad student at California College of the Arts, and I was an intern there for a year, and then I did a short stint as a manager and working as a volunteer, working at the auction and helping out, sweeping floors up, installing things, all that. But I have exhibited my work there a couple of times, and my friend and colleague, I guess Chuck Mobley, is the associate director there, and he invited me to participate in the show when I was talking about my newest body of work and the conceiving of that body of work. And he was explaining to me that the reason he wanted to include my work was because the future and beyond, The Future Lasts Forever, is about sort of, it's part two of the 35th anniversary exhibition of San Francisco Camera Works' existence, which in itself is a huge feat.
Wow.
as an arts nonprofit in the Bay Area, it's been very hard. So, you know, congratulations goes to them for being open for this long and serving young artists and emerging artists such as myself. But the main reason he thought to include me was because the future and The Future Lasts Forever is sort of meant to be a representation of photography in the Bay Area that takes on more than just a photograph. It takes on the role of an archive, a publication, a journal, something more
distinct
conceptual.
Distinct narrative. Yeah.
So something beyond just an object on the wall of a gallery. And I think you'll see in the exhibition, I got a sneak peek of it yesterday, it's going to definitely represent way more than just simply images on the wall.
The list of people involved. It's not only current work, because I believe Mapplethorpe is also involved in the. There's some Mapplethorpes in the exhibition. Is that correct?
Yeah. There's a huge range. It says in the actual exhibition announcement and more.
And
just
more.
Because there's so many. When I was in there yesterday, it's just there's three galleries. It's divided up into these three parts, and it's pretty literally explosive when you first walk in, because there's this huge wall just filled with explosions, and then you go on to just be really blown away by the rest of it. And you know, the last exhibition prior to this, the part one, was sort of a prelude or something that was more meant to lead into the future. So it was the past and the present. And so he's done a very clever job of dividing it up in that way. And he's very particular. If you look at the site, he's very particular about the division of the three rooms and sort of what you're meant to walk through when you go in. And I'm just excited to be there with all the people filling the rooms, because I think that's going to be even more like chaotic and, wonderful.
Well, it's also interesting to have representations of the place where you live and seeing how other people see the place where you live,
mm-hmm.
or how they see corners of where you live that you never see.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the beauty of the exhibition, is that it's a cumulative collection of these different viewpoints of sort of the Bay Area, not just as a geographical place, but as sort of a center or a base of just culture and freedom. And I don't know, I just think of the Bay Area as being really very much about opportunity and sort of openness. And I see it in this way now that I moved away. I see it very in a positive way. Sure, it's overpriced.
Oh, there's that golden patina over the
yes.
Bay Area.
I'm like, oh.
Patina of distance.
Well, because I can come back and experience the parts of it I like and then leave.
And then go away again.
Exactly. But there's definitely that sense of the Bay Area and its sort of history. There's parts of it that you'll see that are historic and address issues of, you know, the land and things like that. But I think it's also about like a portrait of a place, you know.
So. You were in the Bay Area for a decade or more?
Yeah, I was here for 10 years.
Yeah.
I just moved in August with my fiance, Lee Montgomery. We moved out there in August and got our little dog, Skyla, and I'm making artwork. And it's been a real change for me from the Bay Area, the fast-paced life of the Bay Area.
I know you also mentioned before we came on air that you're continuing doing work and mm-hmm. probably actually have more time to do work now. It might be too soon to tell, but is the work you're doing in Albuquerque, can you see a textural difference or a tonal difference in what you're doing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just with a clearer mind. I know that sounds a little cheesy, but, you know, taking time off from teaching is actually as hard as it's been, because I love teaching. I have such a passion for doing that. I have actually been able to step back and find time and develop and sort of hone in, I guess, my art practice a little bit better and get back to sort of what my work as an artist is about, not just as, you know, each project unfolds and being so, you know, hyper, you know, concerned with that like immediate project, but what is my work about as an artist and as a person, and how does it integrate and fit into my life? And it's actually taken a really different turn. I've been like making dream catchers and like, you know, researching the spiritual history of some of the Native American nations right in that immediate area. And I've always had a real interest in Native American culture and have this little sliver of Lakota in me. So always kind of fascinated and interested. And it's just a really different landscape there. The light is different. The lack of the ocean is definitely like difficult for me, but the sky kind of just, it's really,
because there's not really so many mountains in that area.
There's mountains, but it's like you're up in the mountains. So it's a high mm-hmm. desert. And so I was thinking foolishly that we would get there and it would just be hot. I'd throw away all my winter clothes and I'd just be like in the desert, you know, out on the sand. And it's nothing like that. It's like there's snow in the winter and it's actually can be very cold. And so
surprises me.
Yeah, it was literally like the first day of, I think, November, it was snowing and I was like, what's going on?
No, wrong. I moved to New Mexico.
Yeah, exactly.
Get off the map.
Yeah, let's get off the map. But it is. It's because it's like 50 or 5,000 feet, 4,500 feet, depending on where you are up. And then you get up further up into Santa Fe and Taos, and it's even higher. You know, it gets up into like 6,000, 7,000 feet. And it's great coming back here and running, because I'm like so used to how hard it is to do any kind of physical activity there. That's kind of cool. But it definitely has changed like me as a person, and it's changing me, you know, constantly. But I have seen sort of my tendencies towards making my work as being more natural and integrated into what my life is, instead of just like, okay, now I'm teaching and I'm at work, now I'm developing curriculum, now I'm making my artwork, and kind of boxing it off in that way isn't as productive for me anymore.
Well, let's talk about the work. You started off talking about the idea of narratives, or there being something beyond the photograph. Mm-hmm. And that certainly is the case with the work that I've seen that's going to be at the exhibition tonight. Mm-hmm. And just going through the portfolio that's on your website, it's mm-hmm. interesting tracking the stuff that was being done in 1999, the more portraiture kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a very clean, I don't know if I want to use the word traditional, but it's a cleaner mm-hmm. kind of image.
Sure.
And as it goes on, there's more of a sense of things starting to get filtered, things starting to get a lot more textural. It's antique shop was the mm-hmm. word that I was trying to find earlier. It's like if they become photographs you find in a bin at an antique mm-hmm. shop that have been culled from attics from all over the place. Mm-hmm. And you get a sense that there is something happening with this photograph, but since it's been removed from the attic context where it once was, mm-hmm. you have to do a lot of guesswork to kind of figure out what that original context may have been.
Absolutely.
And so I'm wondering if we could maybe just talk about that shift in aesthetic.
Sure, yeah. Well, I like that sort of framework for it. I like how you've worded it with the sort of sorting through a bin, because that's how I've felt, not just in making the images, but in gathering sort of the little scraps of history and personal, you know, journals and letters and things like that. searching for an understanding of, you know, where I come from and how I became who I am in terms of like my family structure. And, you know, I really delved deep into that in a very public way with my previous work about my family, and was sort of all about bearing all, you know, this is the face of it. And it was in a big part for me, a very therapeutic and personally like gratifying experience, but to just sort of tell it as it is and my version and not be afraid of that and be sort of developing confidence in my history and where I come from in a way that I had really been embarrassed or ashamed by in the past when I was growing up that way. And the new work is definitely more about me sort of holding back a lot more and being much more
mysterious
and judicious and like very decisive about, which is very hard for me because I'm not a very decisive person in general. I like to kind of let things unfold and maybe it's this or maybe it's that. And but with this body of work, I've really had to kind of pinpoint, you know, what things am I going to reveal and what things am I not? And the things that I'm not revealing, I think are the viewer can't necessarily get to that on their own, but that I have to sort of time it when I want to reveal what. And you'll see in the exhibition tonight that the piece I have out is very much like an archive. It's like a scrapbook. It's like a, I hate the word scrapbook, but
it's more,
you know,
it's sort of doling out evidence, actually.
Exactly. It is. It's a sort of a search. It's a search for something that I don't even know what I'm looking for necessarily. So I don't know that the viewer will know what I'm looking for, but I hope that there is a sense of that there is a narrative unfolding, that there is a sort of process, and that it's complex and it's layered. And someone recently, when I was talking about my work, described it as an onion, and that you're sort of peeling away these layers, and you know, you're not sure what you're necessarily going to end up with by just peeling away layers of onion, but a pile of onion, you know, in teary eyes, I guess, but that there will be some
kind
of gratification.
Well, that metaphor actually does seem to actually expand itself out fairly well.
Well, yeah, exactly. But just that peeling, that sort of compulsive peeling, and that's kind of how I see myself as an artist, as I am very, you know, compulsive about the actions I take in the writing and the sort of map making. You'll see some maps that I've been working on and things that I need to do for myself anyway. And it's almost like, well, I might as well let people in on it and let them see what I'm working on. But with the audience in mind, it sort of becomes its own different thing. So each piece in the show, in the vitrine that I'm displaying, is sort of very singularly one piece, but that the collection of them kind of shows you a path, or like a an unfolding of sorts of a exploration.
Now, is tonight the finished piece, or is it still being developed? As I believe I understand,
yeah,
right?
It's a work in progress, yeah. And it says that right on the. Each artist was asked in the show to come up with a short blurb or a statement of some kind, and it could be anything. And mine is just simply that. This is a work in progress. And it's just ongoing, like my last project was ongoing for 10 years. This will not last for 10 years. I can assure you of that. It's very exhausting. It's very time consuming. There's a lot of digging, a lot of, you know, there will be an end of some kind, either self-imposed or externally imposed. But I mean, in the meantime, I guess I just have to show it in its current phase when I'm exhibiting it. And the goal is when the work is as complete as it can be, I will have a solo exhibition and put out a book. And that's kind of what I'm working towards.
Is this the first time these have been shown?
Well,
or have there been previous iterations?
There was one other time I displayed one photograph, the first photograph I took in this series, and that was displayed at BayVac. Yeah,
the Bay Area Video Coalition.
Yeah, they had a little exhibition that was about surveillance and about, looking at other people or looking at a situation that wasn't like
from behind a screen or
yeah,
through the brambles.
Exactly.
Or...
So I displayed one photograph from that, and it was just a grainy black and white shot of a figure on a balcony.
It's on the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
The one that sticks with me that's in the that's going to be there tonight is mm-hmm. the one on the road where mm-hmm. you're far, far back, and there's this one figure who's walking away from you at the end of the road.
Right. So
unaware that they're being followed.
Yes. Yes. So they're a series of black and white images shot on very high-speed film with a very long telephoto lens that are all of – basically all of figures, either, you know, depending on how you look at it or how you see it, the same figure or multiple figures. But it's typically a male figure with a very far distance between myself and the subject.
Either distance or with obstruction.
Obstruction, yeah. So I've really been playing with obstruction and composition. And it's interesting that you would bring up how clean and sort of more traditional the images I took of my family were. They were very much based in sort of a rigorous, decisive moment style.
I wasn't even really thinking of the family photographs. Oh. I was thinking of, like, the early portraits from 1999.
Same thing. Yeah, same thing. Like, I was very committed to sort of photography as a traditional medium and using film. And I feel like I've really expanded sort of, especially like some of the artists that I've been looking at more and more, like Sophie Call, Mary Alpern, Trevor Paglen even, mm-hmm. like sort of these things, these mysterious sort of like tales being pieced together that are maybe fact, maybe fiction, a combination of the two. You know, I mean, I'll never forget the first time I ever heard Sophie Call speak at the San Francisco Art Institute, and she revealed that, yeah, you know, I made that up. I made that whole story up. And I was just like, what? You know, because I was just this.
No, artists can do that.
I was
really?
Like, wait a minute, you know? I don't understand. This is preposterous. You know, you really weren't a prostitute, you know, or whatever the story was. I don't remember now. But I was really bummed out for a long time about it. And then I think through looking at more and more work and thinking of, and just as me as a person, as an artist, I've matured into sort of finding more of my interests and playing with truth and fiction and where those lines blur in art is really interesting to me, because that's kind of the definition of how photography exists, is that some people really see it as truth, you know, that a photograph doesn't lie, but it absolutely does. Every photograph is a lie, and it's a wonderful medium in that way, you know. So
when you also think of Herzog's documentaries, which are at least one third fiction, every single one of them, he's
absolutely.
After what's called the ecstatic truth rather than accountant's truth.
Exactly, it's just a wonderful like way to experience someone's version of a truth. I mean, I have versions of truth in my work that change, you know, and I find that particularly interesting when people analyze or take apart a song or a lyric or like a photograph, sculpture, whatever, and then that forever is the way that it's, you know, defined or understood. And I think it's pretty interesting, because it's actually always changing for most artists, you know, how they understand what they're doing.
And on a possibly related note, but going back to something else that you'd said earlier, the idea of you know, very personal work and doing a sort of a bearing all kind of, I'm assuming you're talking about like the family portraits mm-hmm. and the stuff that's dealing with your family.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of taking something that's absolutely personal and possibly confessional in a certain way and putting it in a public place,
mm-hmm.
in a sense kind of universalizing it or trying to see what about it could be universal.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I've been kind of coming back to over the last couple of years mm-hmm. on a more and more regular basis. And I'm wondering if I could maybe toss that out there mm-hmm. and see what responses you've gotten back to something, or how people are interacting with A, your personal life, or B, your personal life through the work, or if, you know, because once your personal life is represented in work, it changes as well. So,
sure.
I mean, there's a whole barrel of issues that kind of come out of that.
Yeah, no, sure. Well, I mean, I think one of the most important responses has always been my subject. And my subject, although is ultimately myself, has often been my family and my sisters, my brother, my mother, at times my grandmother, who's no longer with us, animals that have come and gone out of my life, you know. So I don't know that the animals mind as much.
Now the family dog really liked that portrait.
She really, really liked that one of her jumping. Yeah. No, my sisters and my mom, my brother have all had different feelings and reactions and responses to my examination that included them. And I think people have voiced concern around that when I have been interviewed in the past or questioned at talks or, you know, in discussions, you know, asking questions like, you know, how does your family feel about this? Or, you know, do you think you're exploiting this? You know, relating my work to Richard Billingham, sort of this like just expose of like, you know, look at this crazy situation. And I would say that that has always been a concern for me, but because of my dedication to sort of my own truth and understanding truth and its various forms, the pursuit has been really important. I guess it's the way I've pursued it that I've tried to be mindful of and sensitive to. And I think that comes through in the work, especially particularly with my family, which is interesting to me because the newer work, although it is a very, very much a self, an exploration of my self identity, is literally has other, you know, animals, people, landscapes as the subject. Again, I don't know that the ocean minds so much when I'm capturing them on film with the sunset, but, you know, the people that maybe don't know I'm photographing them or do, depending on the situation, I have no idea how they do or would feel about that. So that's definitely part of the work. And it's part, I think, of the, could be part of the appeal to people maybe, is that questioning that. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with if people see it as a sort of a taking something. I'm okay with that because I know what my intent is and I feel confident in where I'm coming from. But I like that that is sort of a play on, again, the truth of it. And do they even know I'm really photographing someone that doesn't know they're being photographed? So I like to leave that open and kind of take it as it comes. But that's been the main question I think people have had about the work is, you know, how does your family feel about it, or how do your subjects feel about it? And that's a great question because that's something that I have often asked of artists that I really respect, Jim Goldberg and his work Raised by Wolves, or you know, Larry Sultan, who recently passed away, unfortunately, his work about his family. I think that's just been an ongoing question for especially photographers.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to stop there. I'm just suddenly noticing we're running out of time.
Oh my goodness, that did go fast. You said it would go fast.
I told you it would go fast.
Really fast.
We should probably reiterate the specifics once again of the exhibition and
sure.
Times, dates, places.
Yeah, so the exhibition is called An Autobiography of the San Francisco Bay Area, Part 2, The Future Lasts Forever. It opens tonight, Thursday, January 7th. The reception is from 5 to 8 p.m., though I've been told it might possibly go a little bit later. It is a compilation of artists who've made work by artists who've made work in the Bay Area.
Alrighty. For people who want to see the greater swath of your work, website?
Oh, yeah. My own website is jessaminlovell.com. It's just my full name.com. And you can also check out my blog about my life in Albuquerque, which is just blogspot.com/filmnotdead. Just search Film Not Dead and you'll find my work out there.
And Jessamine Lovell is spelled
JessamineLovell.
All right. Well, we have been talking with Jessamine Lovell, and I thank you very, very much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much, Greg.
This has been the program Arts and Review. I am Gregory Sharpen. The New Deal is coming up momentarily to take you up until 3 o'clock. I'd like to spin off from the Goodfoots in memoriam for Lhasa, who unfortunately passed away less than a week ago, rather surprisingly. So I'm going to leave with one Lhasa track from The Living Road, which is not the most recent, it's the second most recent CD of hers. This is an appropriate song. Soon This Space Will Be Too Small. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
space will be too small, and I'll go outside to the huge hillside where the wild winds blow and the cold stars shine. I'll put my foot on the living road and be carried from here to the heart of the world. I'll be strong as a ship and wise as a whale, and I'll say the three words that will save us all, and I'll say the three words that will save us all. Soon the space will be too small, and I'll laugh so hard that the walls cave in. Then I'll die three times and be born again in a little box with a golden key and a flying fish will set me. Soon the space will be too small, all my veins and bones will be burned to dust. You can throw me into a black iron pot and my dust will tell what my flesh would not. Soon the space will be too small, and I'll go outside, and I'll go.
The robots are coming.